I worked in the tech industry for nearly 20 years. When I first started in Dublin at a major blue chip co company, there were very few black employees, despite the company having a significant presence in Ireland. Later, when I moved to another major global tech player, the situation was much the same. Hello, everyone, wherever you may be listening from, good morning, afternoon, or evening. Welcome to the Leadership Podcast. My name is Liliane, but you can call me Lily. Here we dive deep into personal development and leadership. Today, I am delighted to introduce Furkan Karagel. Furkan is the author of Inclusive Intelligence. It's a book that empowers individuals to become role models for diversity and inclusion. In addition to her work as an author, she is a highly sought-after speaker, and she's the founder of Diversen, a platform that champions diversity and inclusion. Now, there's a lot to say about Furkan. Furkan also teaches at Dunleary Institute of Art, Design and Technology, and is deeply passionate about supporting women in tech and fostering more inclusivity in the workplace. Her career includes time at Microsoft, HubSpot, and at Virgin Media. So she really brings an immense depth of experience to her work. Hi, Furkan. It is fantastic to have you with us today. Thank you for joining. I just want to
Thank
say
you
hello.
so much. Thank you so much, Liliane. It's what a fabulous way to start this podcast with the lovely music at the background. I absolutely loved it. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Okay, I read your book, obviously. So the book is called Inclusive Intelligence. What inspired you to write the book, and why did you choose that particular title?
Thank you so much for asking this question to me because it actually is something that really bothered me for such a long time, the lack of inclusive intelligence. And I tell you a little bit about it. Like yourself, I worked in the industry for in the corporate world for such a long time, for 10 big years in multinational tech companies in Ireland as a software engineer. And I have seen the lack of representation. I was sometimes the only woman in the team, sometimes the only non-native English speaker, the only this and this. So you know how frustrating it is. Sometimes you feel like you are alone, to be honest. So I said one day, I'm gonna Google what's the percentage of women of color in the leadership positions of big tech companies. And by the time
My God.
that good, isn't it? So by the time that I Googled it, can you guess what was the rate about?
Very little, I would say. Like, you mean in Ireland or in the world in general?
In the world globally.
Oh, Jesus, I would say 2%.
Very optimistic.
Oh my God, 0.5.
It was less than 1%.
Oh my God.
And I said, Houston, we have a problem here. And I can't sit down and do nothing about it. This is not a problem with one organization or a country, but it is a global issue. As soon as I find this out, and I said, I have to do something about it. And on the other side, you know how some organizations are using these words, diversity, inclusion, belonging, as a marketing tool or to attract talent from anywhere from the global perspective. And it was really frustrating to see only a little impact in diversity initiatives. So then I start to question what really works in those initiatives that has a larger impact. And I came out, I have seen this research. It shows that inclusive, diverse and inclusion initiatives are successful when inclusive leaders are present. So without it, the initiatives and the performance as expected that comes with the benefit of diversity is actually not happening. So then I ask myself, okay, what makes a leader inclusive leader? And me and my team, we have researched this and tried to find out what makes inclusive leaders. And we came out with a pattern in those leaders that made them inclusive leaders. They were self-awareness, empathy, engagement, cultural wisdom, accountability, and commitment. And I couldn't hold this on me, the stories of inclusive leaders, how do they live it on a day-to-day basis? And I sprinkled my own stories working in large organizations as well, that what could have been differently if this scenario could have been looked from another side. And I wanted to collect them in the book so that people can actually, without me being present there, people can learn from these inclusion stories. So that's about it.
Yeah, no, what I really love is even now, like when you explain, you started with asking a big question and you got a number, you've got metrics. So it's not like a gut feeling, it's a reality. So I just love the way you kind of frame the problem, the challenge. And as I read the entire book myself, I love the book because there is data, there are concepts, and there are real concrete tips that one can really apply if one struggles to understand really, because it's not easy for everyone to understand what is diversity and inclusion. So I think the book is brilliant. It's completely digestible and it's a good read. And I highly recommend, I can say it already. Like I think most leaders in tech should read that book. That would really help us all.
So, thank you.
Of course. Okay. So in the book, when I started the book, I loved the way you define diversity. And I really liked it because it felt like it was your definition, not the definition taken somewhere. And I'm just going to read it if that's okay, because I love it. Diversity is you because you are unique. Inclusion is accepting you because you matter. Diversity is being inviting to the table. Inclusion is sharing the cake fairly. Now, could you just say a bit more on that definition? Anything that comes to your mind, just for listeners to pay attention and really understand, you know, what it is and why it is so important.
Mm-hmm. I think diversity and inclusion definitions can vary by people, by organization. And I think that's the beauty of it. I particularly didn't want to use any definition by anyone else, because in the book, in my talks, in my way of looking at diversity and inclusion, had to be defined by me. And I spent actually ways and days to explain it in a simple way as possible, while it's easy to remember as well, and it resonates with people. So when I think of diversity is you, the inclusion starts with you. So it's including you as well as looking at others and others' uniqueness, and recognizing those uniqueness within us and then within other people as well. And accepting us is something sometimes we struggle when we are talking about, you know, in the team, recognizing others' differences. But how does this differ from other from our understanding of a communication, for example, viewing the world? So I think when we say about the inclusion starts with us, it's us, how we define us, and there is no one way of definition. And I always encourage people, and especially if people are open to be authentic themselves and a candidate to be an inclusive leader, why not have your own definition of it? And I think the more you have a thought of it, the more you use your own definition, it resonates, it stays with you longer. So listen to others or have a look at the other definitions and come up with your own sentences and define what is it for you. And I think it is going to be unique. It is going to be wonderful. It is going to be so you.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, because by actually trying to find a definition, let's say for myself, it means that at least I'm making the effort to understand it enough so that I can come up with my own explanation of what it is. So yeah, really, really, really love that. Now, we obviously both, we live in Dublin, in Ireland.
Yeah.
The tech industry is quite big here. So, and we know the ecosystem is fairly small in a way, like we come across the same people, like we've both been in Ireland for quite some time. What mm-hmm. are your thoughts? And I'm just going to be cautious here. I'm not asking you for something 100% accurate. It's just your perception of the current state of diversity and inclusion in mm-hmm. Ireland. And obviously, I don't want anybody to hold you accountable for what you're going to say. It's just a perception. But mm-hmm. you've been talking to a lot of companies. You've been going to a lot of tech companies. What do you think is the current state? You can describe it with words or adjectives, or you can use a scale from 1 to 10, obviously 10 being wonderful and 1 being pretty poor. How would you rate or how would you describe the state of D&I in Ireland?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question, and I got this question a lot, to be honest. I believe my perception of DEI's current state doesn't got to do with other organizations or other people, to be honest. So if I define it, I think it's my own perception is going to be, and I think everyone have different experiences. So therefore I wouldn't scale it from 1 to 10, but I can use some words that maybe describes my feeling about it. And I think in Ireland, diversity and inclusion, initiatives are motivated and accelerated, I think positively supported, and has a good presence right now in sometimes in the media and sometimes in the priority of organizations. So it is on the right move, or it's been accelerated with the need of it, with being vocal about it by the society and by the leadership as well. But there is always a room to grow. A person, an inclusive leader, meaning that it is not, they are not perfect in every level of inclusion. So there is always a room to improve for anybody, for any society. So my own opinions are, I think the visibility for diversity and inclusion is there, but we need to take more actions that support those good intentions and those good plans, let's say.
Yeah, no, I hear you completely. Like, obviously, anyway, we'll touch more on that with questions that I have later.
Can I
But
ask, can I add something else as well,
of
Lillian?
course, of course.
I think, to be honest, my view wouldn't be very objective. Why? Because people know my profile. People know that I'm the author of Inclusive Intelligence book. People know that I am working on this space. So people don't come to me if they are not interested about it. So
That's very true.
naturally, I'm surrounded by, let's say, a bubble really of people who are either working in the space or people are eager to learn more about it. So I think my perception of it is so much biased about my environment as well.
And that is so true. And thanks for being candid about it, because you just made me realize that it makes sense, totally. Now that's completely fair. Like, obviously, with the questions, I have a number of questions for you today, and I'll touch a bit on my own perception at some point, even though it's not about me today, it's more about you. But all right. So in the book, you highlight that inclusive intelligence is best achieved when leaders demonstrate certain skills, and you kind of touch on them earlier: empathy, engagement, commitment, accountability, cultural wisdom, and self-awareness. Based on your experience, which of these skills do you find most challenging to develop, and why?
I think the most challenging one, well, it differs from one person to another, but what I see is the most challenging is if you have this vulnerability door open, meaning that people, they see themselves as, I have a room to grow. I have more accountability. I have more things can be added to my learning, to my personal development. Then they are in that open mindness state or growth mindset state so that they are able to tap up on their actions, on their learning or seeing the situation from a different perspective. Once the door is not open, so whatever you say, for example, if one leader is not a highly aware, self-aware person, so even though they are empathetic person or they are engaged, so their ability to see the situation from different angles is going to be limited. So I would highly say self-awareness is the biggest thing. We don't know what we don't know, and the Johari Windows actually says. But I say the courage to step into that and discover and unpack or find ways to understand what we don't know is the key. At the end of my Inclusive Intelligence 360 tool that demonstrates where we are in this journey, whoever organization or team or a leader takes this, they don't know, but at the end, I give them a certificate of courage because it's a challenging thing. It is vulnerable. It shows the openness, the courage of themselves to be able to do the things better. And I think it demonstrates a lot in, it's self-awareness is like a door. So if you get into that door, then the rest will be able to unlock, let's say, or get more usable in your own skills. Unfortunately, if the self-awareness door is open or very little open, unfortunately, not much things are happening. Can I share as
Of course, please do.
vulnerable story of mine? So I have two team members, and the third one recently joined a few months back. So I know the two is not enough for one person's understanding of inclusive leadership. And last week, I asked my team, three of them, to fill out our inclusive Intelligence 360 survey and rate my inclusive leadership. So thankfully, they have completed with their honesty, with their comments and everything. I have room to grow as well. Even though I developed this tool, even though I'm learning every day, I'm experiencing something different about inclusive intelligence and my own leadership skill. I know I'm not perfect, and I know I have my fear, I have my uncomfortable times in my leadership, that I'm hesitant, that I'm very afraid to do things, to be honest. So I wanted to take this challenge with myself as well. So who am I then talk about inclusive leadership if I don't step into that openness, vulnerability, that courage, if I don't demonstrate it myself? So yeah, this is a story.
Yeah, I really love it. It's about, you know, walking the talk, and I'm right there with you when it comes to self-awareness. As a leadership coach, I know, like, without self-awareness, it's difficult to drive any change. And it's almost like asking one person to self-diagnose, and that's not always easy. And from our experiences as two women who grew up in different countries, who have been living abroad, self-awareness sometimes comes with experiences. But when you travel, when you, like, I've lived in five countries, when you travel, experience different environments, you have to adapt to other people. And to survive and then later to thrive, you really need to work on your self-awareness, because your environment is not going to change for you. So obviously we had to be more self-aware. But for people that are working in Ireland that maybe haven't worked abroad or lived abroad, and being exposed to as much diversity, it's not an easy task to be self-aware around that. So I totally appreciate that. And thanks for being so honest and candid. But that's why I wanted to have you here today anyways, because I know that about you. So
thank you.
Another thing that I thought was quite interesting in the book is you share stories, you know, and as we know, human beings, we learn from stories because that's the way our brains are wired. And you share in the book, and I heard the story because I've studied you quite a bit. Every time I interview someone, I think the minimum respect is to study them, see what they've put out there, learn about them. And you've mentioned a memorable, I will put that adjective, memorable personal story about cultural wisdom in the book. I would really love it if you could share it today for our audience. And I know you've shared the story many times, but I think it's a great example.
Sure. And from the book or sometimes from my talks, this is one of the most memorable things they say that they will remember. So I think it's kind of like a bittersweet story. So I'll share it here as well. So it was one of the warmest day of Irish summer. And you know, Lillian, how rarely we get this, right? So I was working as a software engineer, and my company invited an ice cream man for employees to enjoy the sunshine outside, and wonderful. And it was the first day of Ramadan, and I was fasting, but I didn't mind it at all. I was working away as usual on my desk, and the first person passing my desk said, "Furkan, did you see the ice cream man? Go and get one. Get your ice cream." And I said, "Thank you so much for thinking of me, but I'm fasting today." And then we had a conversation about like 5 to 10 minutes, talking about Ramadan and when does it start, like when am I eating again, and all these things. And then next person passing by again told me the same thing, "Furkan, go and get your ice cream." And I said, "You know what, it's Ramadan, blah blah." So same conversation, but I really admire how people cared about me getting the ice cream, you know, before it's gone. And next time, again, another person passing by, actually was my manager, was telling me about it and etc. So anyway, that afternoon, at the end of the day, everyone's energy level went up because they were having a, you know, having a conversation on, in the queue, enjoying the sunshine, having the ice cream. But my energy level went down, and I tried to understand. It took me a while to understand why, because I have seen and felt the care from my colleagues, but I was practicing my own value. But why I still had this, like, something that bothered me inside. And I find it out later on. It was the company's decision or company's view on my decision wasn't being taken into account. And I have no idea how many people were fasting on that day. And so each time I reply to people, my colleagues, my trust in the organization got broken each time. And I think about all the company that I worked for, like, quite a long time, didn't care about me and my choice. But the problem wasn't there about the ice cream. The problem there was they didn't have a clear communication channel for employees to bring up issues like this so that next time it could have been preventable so easily. Things will happen, you know, no one can absolutely know about another person's circumstances or their preferences. These things will happen, and this is natural and normal. And I think the key message here from the ice cream van is the openness to accept, the openness to build that communication channel so that people will be able to come to you with an open heart, with a trust, so that these things could have been avoided. So many people came back to me, Furkan, you could have educated your employee, you could have done this. Well, I'm being paid as a software engineer. I'm not being there as a consultant. So that is not, first of all, not my job. And second is, I wasn't going to go and look for who was going to be taking my comment or my feedback about the situation. Imagine me going to HR and can I share something about this? Who is that person? Where is the email? So where is the contact detail so that I could actually go and communicate? Because it wasn't clear, I wasn't going to make myself funny going and like a headless chicken and try to give that feedback. So if the company was open, they would build that communication channel. Not only this, but for similar issues as well. And I know if they knew it, they would change it in a heartbeat. They would apologize a lot. And I know from the heart, they would do it. But I think they lost that communication with the openness and building that environment. So I think, sorry, it took a bit long.
No, not at all. I was paying attention. Yeah, no, I think there is an element as well. We always come back to it. And that's kind of linked to the answer you shared earlier around self-awareness. Like, an organization needs to be self-aware. And when that self-awareness does not exist, it's even hard to have the right behaviors and the right communication, probably. But I mean, I love the example because it speaks a lot to the challenges and the struggles faced by some employees in silence a lot of the time. And I've been that employee myself, especially when you're young and you're new to a country. You don't want to make too much noise, and you don't want to be seen as the person who complains. Myself, as a Black person, I know some people have a bit of prejudice about Black people. So there are things that I don't want to be seen as somebody who complains. And so sometimes you might not say something, or sometimes it's so shocking that you're voiceless as well. That has happened to me in the past as well. But thanks for sharing that example that I am sure so many listeners will be able to relate to.
And one little thing, I think it has a huge potential to be able to, to make the things much, much easier for everybody. You don't know, as you said, there are people who maybe would like to bring up something, but they don't want to because, I mean, maybe they are not ready to face with somebody to talk about it. But if it's an email or if a phone number or something, much easier making it anonymous, making it, easier for people to build that trust and share, then you cannot imagine what kind of things maybe very easily can be implemented, can shift with just one thing.
But to me now, to me, there is one thing that is key, is like you first line managers should be equipped. Doesn't matter where you're from, if you're working for a corporation that has diversity, they might not have inclusion. Most of the time they don't, but they have diversity. So if you have diversity in your team, whatever type of diversity you have, like I'm coaching different people from all walks of life, and there's a lot of diversity. You and I, we know it's not only ethnicity, it can be so many different things. But as a manager, you need to be equipped or ready to equip yourself with the right knowledge. So to me, I will almost want to hold your manager accountable because he or she probably did not create that type of environment where, even if there was not an email, you would have felt comfortable, confident enough to come to him or her and to say, "Look, this is what happened. I don't feel too good about it." But the fact that to me you didn't feel like talking to your own manager means that at the time that person who has probably changed and improved hadn't done or communicated in the right way with the team, so that you, if you felt like that, you would have felt comfortable coming to him or her, him or, yeah. So.
Very good point, Lillian. And I would like to add, in tech companies, people get promoted because they have technical skills. And unfortunately, there are so many first-time managers who doesn't know how to communicate better with their team members or with other teams as well. So that's why these things are important not to be ignored, because once you become a manager, your work is mostly about communication, working with people, getting people to work. It's not technical anymore. But unfortunately, when people are being promoted, their technical skills are taken more into account by organizations.
Oh, totally. And that is, the human side of it. So pretty much as a leadership coach, I see that quite a bit, even with people or CEOs that I coach. It's like people get promoted, they have the technical skills, they have I would say the operational knowledge that they need to have. But you should be promoting leaders, people that are good with other people, that can get the best from them. And like imagine, like you, let's say you have amazing skills and you felt so bad that that day you decided to leave the team. They would have lost like somebody who has great skills. Like something similar happened to me. I mean, not exactly, but that was more about it's actually now he's a VP at a very big company. I'm still in touch with him. He's a lovely guy, but along like 20 years ago, at the beginning of our careers, we worked for the same company, and he made jokes and had a behavior that, as a woman, to me, made me feel really uncomfortable. Anyway, I'm somebody equipped, and I'm pretty direct, so I address the matter myself. But I have to say, I was hesitant already to stay in that company. And before 3 months, I just left. And that was actually the,
Wow.
that was not the reason, because I was just not, I didn't like the culture of the, at least the office where I was in Dublin. But that was the last throw, the last thing. And that was the last drop. And I was like, this is it. I'm just not going to work there. So completely like this is, and that's the thing, you know, I believe most organizations don't realize how critical diversity and inclusion is, because you got to lose people, you got to lose great people. So totally.
And it
Anyways.
takes time to replace those talents and bring them into the same competence level as the
Yeah.
previous one. So it's so much, yes.
And the danger, just to add to this point, is as mo most organizations use diversity as a beautiful package, right? So it's just the
Yeah.
visual, it's just the appearance. Oh, we are so diverse, blah, blah, blah. But they don't know how to handle diversity. So people join the company, let's say they are from a diverse background, but if they leave, so basically you're hiring people that you can't keep because you don't know how to communicate and value these people, or at least make them feel welcome and create an environment where they can thrive. I was like part of the diversity and inclusion task force at least two scale-up companies based in Dublin, but HQ'd in California. And my God, even being in the US, I've seen and heard things. I was just like, oh my God, total waste of my time. But
Wow.
so yeah, no, this is like I'm so happy you're here, because we need to call a spade, you know? Like you have to tell it the way it is, because there's a lot of lip service
Yeah,
around
so
diversity and inclusion. So now, if I play the devil's advocate just for a moment, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because we need to be fair. Obviously, in an increasingly diverse world, you know, I need to we need to ask ourselves. So we are people, we come from diverse background, we travel a lot, we've seen a lot. So for us, it's like we're a bit like a fish in the water. We understand those things almost naturally. But it's not the case of everyone, you know. And I wonder sometimes, and this is where I believe in education. I believe in helping people get better, not judging people. You know, it's not, and I know you're the same because that's why you created your business. It's about helping people, providing, like, be of service to others. Is it realistic today? With the fast-paced world that we live in, imagine like I was a sales manager, a senior sales manager at a tech company. Like you're working fast, you have targets, you're stressed, you have so many things to do. You have to travel, you have to go and see customers, blah blah blah. And on top of that, you're asked to be super smart and understand, you know, what makes a person unique, et cetera, et cetera. I just wonder, like, is it realistic if we have to be fair?
Well, we are not perfect, so that we can't expect anybody or any leader to be a perfect manager for us. So that is very unrealistic. I think what we can expect, the more we enhance our communication within one and another, I think that gives us for example, if I say a sentence, if it comes from me, from my body language, so people know me, they understand what I actually mean about it. And comparing to another person who communicates it differently, maybe they mean something else. So it's not realistic. So I think let's put our guards down and not expect anybody to be perfect. And I think that's not the aim anyway. So the aim is to build that safe space between our communication so that whatever is not working can be communicated much easily rather than expecting or blaming or finger pointing. And the more we communicate, I believe, the more it's going to be improving.
Yeah, no, totally. And thanks for saying that. I think for me, we need to stay kind to one another and appreciate the fact that it's not about blaming, definitely not. And by the way, this is not what we are doing here today. I know we both love Aaron so much. I wouldn't be somebody who would blame. I just want people to, I want people to be, to get coaches, be trained by you, by your team, to become better so we have less friction, you know, when people are trying to conduct businesses. Like I've experienced so many situations myself over the years, but I was equipped, so like I wouldn't freak out or, but like there were crazy situations. Actually, speaking of one, let me share a personal experience.
Sure.
I would say less than a decade ago, before the Black History Month, I spoke with directors at a company that I worked for. So as a sales manager, I suggested we should recognize the unique experience of Black professional in Europe. Obviously, if we take in consideration the colonial history around Africa and the European continent, because it was Black History Month, so working for an American company, like we had all sorts of virtual events we were welcome to attend. And so I kind of explained, we were two Black people in Dublin.
Wow.
Of African
Out of
origins.
How many employees?
No. It was not a big, I can't remember how many we were at the time. No, the number, obviously, we wish it, we will be more of us, but I think it's, what the point I'm trying to make is that it's not the fact that we're not too many people of Black, but like Black, or, but I'm just trying to raise the fact that this guy was of African descent. Like he was originally came from Africa. Like his country of origin was Nigeria. And I come from Gabon, which is Central Africa. So an English African person with a French speaking African person. So you know yourself, Africa is a continent. So me and him, we are diverse. Is that we're Black African, but the culture is not the same because Africa is a continent. It's not a country like most people tend to forget. But so that day, me and him tried to explain to the, and he was a manager at the time as well. We tried to explain to the directors that we felt it would be amazing to have a small session for the European office to talk about, to celebrate Black History Month, where me and him could kind of share certain things about, you know, where we both come from, just to create more awareness, blah, 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 around the teams. And obviously we would have done it without asking anybody to help us.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, the answer we got them from people that are lovely people. They're really like lovely directors. I wouldn't have a bad thing to say about them. But it's just to explain the experience. And most people are not aware of that. If you're Irish and you don't have that background, it's hard for you to understand because you're not equipped for that, maybe. And the answer we were given was something. The goal was not to come across like that, but for us, it felt like our perception was that, all right, why should we have something special for the European team? You know, in America, they're Black. You guys are Black. It's the same. And that's pretty much the answer we got. Not like that, but it was, and it felt pretty much like all Black people are the same, which for me is telling an Irish person that they are the exact same as an English person, which some, like some Irish people wouldn't like that, you know. So that's the way we kind of felt, me and him. We were like, and to be honest with you, that moment led me to completely disengage from diversity and inclusion efforts at that company, because to me I was like, this is no, I'm not gonna try to convince them of something that to me it's pretty shocking. But at the same time, I kind of felt because I just hold space for people, and as we said before, you only know what you know, and what you don't know, you can't know. So I always tell myself, is it really fair to expect leaders that haven't been exposed, you know, for some of them, they haven't been exposed to even to Black people. So for them, it's like, okay, they don't have the cultural wisdom because they haven't been exposed to it. They don't have the tools, they don't have the context. So I think we need to stand them for a big training so that we create that
Absolutely.
awareness. Because if we don't do that, those situations actually are happening and people don't complain. People don't say anything. Because I did not. I was in a position where I could have, but I was like, nah, I'm not gonna waste my time. I have targets to hit. I have, as a manager, I have problems to deal with every day. Not my problems, other people's problem. And for me, this is a minor problem. I can take it. It's not going to stop me from sleeping. However, I do think it's wrong. But at the time, I didn't think it was worth addressing. Now, if they listen to me, they will recognize probably themselves, or maybe they have forgotten already. I don't know. But is it fair to expect people to have the cultural wisdom? I feel like it's really not realistic because people don't have the time and some of them don't have the interest.
I see. Thanks for sharing your story openly and honestly, Lillian. I think you point into a very good area. I believe every single leader should have an element of inclusivity. And I wouldn't say, I think if I was in that or I was involved in that organization, I think I wouldn't question about that person, but I would question about who promoted and make that person to be in the decision-making position. Because once the system allows this, we will see so many stories like this happening. So it's not about the people. Yes, maybe they have room to grow about cultural wisdom, about inclusivity, but who has the power to make them coming and making decisions about the things that are not inclusive or considered inclusive. So this is what I'm trying to advocate for. People will have different levels or understanding of inclusion, about culture, about empathy. But if our systems are not transparent, if our systems don't recognize where is it broken, because there will be people like this. We can't force everyone to be more inclusive if they don't want to. But if we decide whom are we working with, whom are we putting into a position of power so that it can inclusion can be amplified. If I do that, that means that I am responsible from whatever the outcomes comes from it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, in my specific case, to be completely honest and fair, I think I did not even raise with my colleague. We discussed it. We were a bit like, not, I wouldn't say disgusted. We were just like, oh my God, this is worse than we thought. that's the way we both felt. We were like, oh my God, it is so disappointing to see the lack of awareness. Because the person who react, those people that were on the phone, they did not on the call, they did not even realize what they just said to us, basically. They were not aware. Now, my responsibility, I can only speak for myself. I did not take the responsibility to speak up and say, hey guys, this is pretty crap. And I had the tools. I was not intimidated. I was just like, I'm too busy. I don't have time to go into a long conversation. They don't get it. I have other things to do. But for me, like I'm a pretty strong person, so it didn't affect me at all. My motivation to work for the business was the same, honestly. But I just know other people. So for me, when I look back and I say, how could we fix this? For me, I'm a bit idealistic. I think every single tech company, especially the scale up, when they land in Dublin, usually they have a lot of cash to spend on training. They spend a lot of money on big parties where people go and drink and have food and open bar. Well, you know what? Automatically, and maybe that should be something that the Irish government should ask. They should say you have to spend 10% of the money that you have, the revenue that you make in Ireland, you need to invest in training for your leadership team. And there should be like a 101 diversity. You know, like when you go for a training to become a manager, that should be there. But like a proper training, like they come to you, to your organization, you train them in a room, like not a bloody online video that you watch. And so anyways.
That's a good point. It should be a part of onboarding process, and but spending some time in training doesn't necessarily mean the action is going to be coming afterwards. But I believe in the power of one-on-one coaching and mentorship that, you know, we are adults. We learn from questioning our own beliefs or coming up with our own ideas than somebody's telling what to do. So I think building that environment that people will enhance their understanding a little bit more into what inclusion word includes in it.
Yeah, no, totally, totally. But I at the same time, I think there is that other, and like I'm being candid, because like I'm just talking about tech companies because these are the companies that I know the most. For me, most organizations are driven by generating revenue. At the end of the day, especially American companies, that's the bottom line. We just want revenue, and that's really all that matters. So you see, when the shit hits the fan, you know, when there is a crisis and we start letting go people, stuff like that, diversity is like, it's just a nice thing to have, you know, and you actually feel, you really feel very much like there is this element of tokenism, you know, like, okay, we need to make sure that I have a black person, an Asian person, if I can, a Muslim person, like on the picture, that's really gonna look good. And I remember I was working for my first scale up in Dublin, like more than 10 years ago, and they had RTE or I don't know which. So they were in the office, and when I saw the camera, I told myself, I know I'm going to be on camera. I think I was the only black person. They will show my face. That I knew it, and that's exactly what happened. And then a friend of mine texted me and said, "Hey, you were on TV. This check this out." And I looked, and I was on the phone, and they just took a shot at me because hey, they had to show that he looks good. You see,
I know
but
the feeling.
So what
Yeah.
is your take on tokenism?
Yes, it's there, unfortunately, and I think as a person, if you are, let's say, the only this and that, what you don't want to be under the spotlight all the time. Like in your case, maybe you didn't want to be, zoomed in
I
for
didn't
a.
mind, to be honest. I'm pretty chill, pretty laid back. I didn't mind, but
Okay.
I predicted it and I was right.
Like people sometimes don't prefer to be under the spotlight based on what do they prefer. But unfortunately, the tokenism is putting us under the spotlight. And I think it's not going anywhere. So what's the point of having a diverse diverse pictures of on social media? So what? So what does it change? Does it change any perception of any managers treating me fairly and inclusive in the meeting? So people started understanding what tokenism is in the D&I space, and I think we had enough of it. And I think people don't fall into that anymore if it's being used.
Yeah,
Okay, that
totally.
shows one part of use to me. If I will be, used as a tokenism, like to be honest, sometimes when I'm being invited to speak at panels, and especially this is the panels because they want to diversify the
Yeah.
panels. So once I felt strongly that I was being used in that organization, it was very anyway, from the history of me being communicating with them, I felt like I was being used in it. And then I asked myself, Furkan, would you like to be part of this? And one side of me said, Furkan, you know what? If they are using you use them as well. So I said, okay, even though I know this, I want to appear in there. This happened to me once, to be honest. And because they had a large number of audience, and I wanted to actually speak to them about me. And I said, Furkan, I know this is a tokenism, but if they want to use you use them as well. So I went to that event. I have spoke. I made with wonderful people. But I didn't feel myself associated with the organization, and I don't think I would ever do anything with them again. But that's, I met with wonderful people who are so who speak from the heart, who is so believing in it. So I think it's up to the people who. Because I think it's becoming more visible if organizations are using it as a tokenism and or not. And I think we are not taking that anymore. People see it, people sense it. Once they see it, if I'm being invited to somewhere and then if I'm not being treated properly like anyone else or any respect that we all deserve, then it's better for me not to be there or not to be invited from the beginning, because that breaks the trust, the bond, the belief in the organization. So people see that anyway. If you bring someone out there and ask maybe stupid questions about DEI, or these things happen, and it comes like it comes out eventually, I believe.
Totally. I think people see right through it. But what I love about your example is like you have awareness. So as long as you're aware of it, that you're being used as a token, it's fine. I think it's really sad when people are used and they're not aware of it. So at least you were aware of it and you made the best out of it for your own self.
It took
So
me a while, to be honest, to recognize it. I learned.
yeah, and that's totally normal. I feel like I've been used as a token before, definitely. And many times I think I was aware of it, but I was, well, if it helps me to get to a place where they haven't seen me before, or someone like me, I'm good with that. As long as I'm aware and I stay true to myself, and I don't pretend to be what I'm not, and I'm always proud of where I come from. So to me, it's fine. Cool. I think there's another aspect is obviously like tech companies are supposed to be like are definitely driven, right? And we talk a lot about OKRs. That's a lot of companies have OKRs at least twice a year usually, or every quarter. It depends on organizations. And I have to say that the especially I think the last two companies that I work for, at least, they had actually OKRs that focused on D&I. Now, to me, I felt like this is positive. That doesn't mean that this is all good and perfect, but already having that, because we need to put a metric on it. We need to put a number. Like if you don't measure something, how are you going to improve it? So what percentage, and once again, it's just a perception. Like, do you think like having OKRs for D&I, is that something that you've seen a lot in Ireland with the tech companies? I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on that.
I think I don't know much because I didn't work with every tech company in Ireland. I wish I could have. That would be wonderful. But I think, as you said, measuring what gets measured gets done. So you know where are the current state, what can you actually improve. So part of the measurement of DEI or inclusive leadership. We launched this Inclusive Intelligence 360 model to let the organization to see what are the percentage of their organization or sometimes their team or their department, where are they? What percentage of them are championing leaders or almost champions or roaming or disconnected. This is the CARD method. We say CARD, champion, almost champion. And then we also give a report of the views of leaders. Where do they see themselves based on these inclusive intelligence pillars? And then how their teams view of them collectively. And we put them into a graph and show with data. Where are the largest gaps and room to improve in terms of their inclusive leadership out of these self-awareness, empathy, engagement, cultural wisdom, accountability, commitment, and also a little bit more on that as well, valuing trust and more so that organizations can see collectively. And it's an anonymous thing. You know how our organizations are. Asking employees to do 360 or performance feedback reviews. Once it's done by a third party, employees trust in them more, to be honest, so that if it is anonymous, because it goes through email, you know, once you click on it, the logging and everything. So this is something completely we don't do, so that employees can be a bit more honest on their views. And also in a communication, we communicate as like what impact this will have for you, making them feel like this is you are part of the inclusion in the inclusion process of your team and for your organization, so that they are owning it as well as for the leaders. This is not to blame. This is not to bring up something about you to the organization. It's not finger pointing. It's not blaming. So it is completely just for you to get a better understanding of where can you prioritize in your inclusive leadership journey, other than, being lost. They don't know where to start. They don't know what to do. They don't know what is inclusive or not even sometimes. So making it a bit more simpler for them
I
with
love
data.
it. It's pragmatic. It tells people where they are. So it's like, okay, it's almost like, okay, what's your current state? Yeah, this is the picture. This is where we are. So talking about self-awareness, as you've mentioned it earlier in our conversation today, this is providing awareness at the team level or at an organization level, and it's not pointing the finger. But to start, you need to be aware, right? If we want to improve, we need to know what's to improve. So that is super powerful, I think. So it's kind of giving almost metrics as well, because you can tell like how many champions you have and so on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is actually brilliant. I hope and wish more and more companies do this kind of, it's a diagnosis. This is fantastic. Furkan, I could talk about diversity and inclusion for 24 hours. I swear I
Me
could.
too.
And I know. That's why we probably will have to do this again, probably taking another angle, but I'll be definitely inviting you another time. If you spoke French, I would invite you on my other podcast. But
Oh mon Dieu, my answer to that.
oh mon Dieu. So as we wrap up, unfortunately, not all leaders can afford to invest in, hiring you or your company, or hiring a coach, or maybe their company will not spend budgets on working with your business, unfortunately. Let's say if somebody, like, let's say I'm a leader, I kind of know deep inside that when it comes to diversity and inclusion, I could be better. And let's say that I want to be better. And obviously, other than buying your book, which I think everybody who listens should do so, how do you think one could practice, like if you had to give tips, like simple tips, or maybe one tip, the one tip, if anybody wants to try something simple, how can they practice inclusive intelligence?
Well, there are so many ways based on the person's priority. But I can say if you dedicate and book a time on your calendar weekly, maybe something like 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and encourage your team to do that as well. And in that time, you invest into your understanding of inclusion more. And this is one thing I would highly recommend. Once in a busy life we all have, once we dedicate some time, and I think the things are much more doable. And try not to do the things by yourself, and invite your team together, get their opinions, or open up a space for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or if you want to include something just before every meeting. For example, if there is like a section meeting that is being happening every month, so include maybe 10 minutes of that time to talk about what we all can do and getting the opinions from the team. And I think not taking everything on yourself, but adding people onto your journey is an absolutely brilliant way to engage with them, hear their opinions, and also see what you all can do about it.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for that tip, Furkan. I really, really, really want to thank you so much for joining me today. As we conclude, for those interested, like where can they get your book? And what is the best way to reach you?
You can get my book on Amazon or on all online stores. And please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn, on every social media. I am very active and I look forward to meeting you.
That's wonderful. So I will definitely be sharing actually with the my post on LinkedIn. I'll have the links as well to make it easy for people. So no, I just want to say we encourage everyone to practice the six inclusive intelligence skills, which are empathy,
Awareness.
engagement, commitment, accountability, cultural wisdom, and self-awareness. I hope I've been a good student.
Yes, you did.
So just let's be all more inclusive to our colleagues. If we are leaders, it's even more important. And a big thank you to you, Furkan. You're the author of Inclusive Intelligence and founder of Diversion.com. Don't forget her wonderful definition of diversity and inclusion. Diversity is you because you are unique. Inclusion is accepting you because you matter. So I'm Liliane, and I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Stay tuned for our next episode.
Thanks for having me, Lillian. Thanks, everyone.
My pleasure.